Welcome into this edition of ESPN FC alongside Shaka Hislop. I'm Sebastian Salazar. Great to have you with us, Shaka. Great day of football, yeah? Lots to get to. Let's start in the Premier League. Look at the top of the table, where Manchester City are now 2 points behind Chelsea. Chelsea, big winners on Saturday, 7-0 over Norwich. A hat trick in that one for Mason Mount. Manchester City, meanwhile, go away to Brighton, who have been the surprise package so far of the season, and turn in an impressive 4-1 result. For more, let's welcome in this Chelsea player and a man who's always smiling, but surely smiling even more today. There it is. Frank, you must be pleased with that that Chelsea put up. What do you think of the performance?
Yes, I'm pleased. That was a fantastic performance, especially because, Tuchel made six changes comparing to the last game. And I was very pleased to see that because we normally say that Chelsea is a rich club, we can buy any players. But the three first goals were scored by three guys, from the academy. Hudson-Odoi, Mason Mount, and then Reece James. And it says a lot about Chelsea. Yes, they have money. Yes, they have stars. But they also have those kind of players, fantastic players, who give everything for their colors and prove that they deserve to be in a big club like that. So that was a very serious performance. I cannot say the same about Norwich. I think that was an appalling performance where defensively they opened spaces and it was kind of an open bar. Be my guest, score goals, enjoy your life at Stamford Bridge for the Blues. But Blues-wise, Chelsea-wise, nothing to say about anything. Everybody was spot on.
Kaka, to Frank's point there, Norwich now with a minus 21 goal differential across nine matches. So what was the story in this game? Good Chelsea or bad Norwich?
Both, in all honesty. Listen, these are games going into, given Norwich's own record, given their start to the season, that as Chelsea, you can take quite easily. And in all honesty, you only have to be 50%, and you would still probably get 3 points off of Norwich. But I don't think you saw that at all from Chelsea. I thought Chelsea did everything that could be asked of them. No Romelu Lukaku, so they had to adjust formation-wise. But at no point did their intensity, did their focus drop, smashing seven past Norwich, the least that they deserved. They really were that good, but then Norwich are also really that bad.
Yeah, Jan, if there's anything that kind of makes this so impressive, it's not just the seven, it's the fact that they do it without Lukaku, without Timo Werner.
Absolutely, and Frank got a very good point there, because I think that is a mixture of great football clubs. Yes, you have the money, will always be an advantage, but I think it's also something about the identity of a club. And Thomas Tuchel and the rest of the management will be very happy today. Also, that Mason Mount this week was criticized because he didn't score goals. And then he got a hat-trick and an assist today, which is the timing of the season so far, by the way.
Yeah, to that point, Frank, Mount before the game says, he puts pressure on himself to get on the score sheet. Did it three times today, and the opener was a good one.
Yeah, but we all know that he's a really talented player, and he will get the experience. He will get everything that he needs to be on the top of the top. He's not that far already. And, people who start, criticizing him, saying he doesn't score enough goals. We have to see the commitments of every game he plays. He gives everything. Now, he's not bothered about defending. He likes to give assists. Of course, he loves scoring goals. He's a perfect player, with a very good spirit, and he's very young still. So we have to let him grow. We have to let him get the experience that he needs. And a game like today will bring him the confidence that he needs to keep on scoring goals and be very useful to his big club.
And it's an important goal, as we see their goal now. If we see back on the great Chelsea side over the years, if we see back to the Frank Lampard, John Terry, they had great superstars who came to the club, but somehow the backbone and the identity of the club was Frank Lampard and John Terry. And maybe we see some signs of the same now.
Xhaka, do you see this team as title favorites? Thomas Tuchel asked about it after the match. He wouldn't bite. Will you?
I do, actually. I think it is very close to call. And Just ask me in 25 minutes. I'll probably give you a different answer between Chelsea, City, and
you Liverpool. Going back and forth now.
Yeah. I'm giving myself that little bit of a get out. But listen, between the top three, there is very little in between them. The thing I like about Chelsea, but then you could probably say the same about the other two, is that against lesser opposition, they just don't look like faltering. Mm. This is a game that quite easily Chelsea could have taken their foot off the gas, been a little bit less professional about. I don't think they would have lost to a team like Norwich, but against other teams in the league who are down there, if you aren't at your best, you may drop points. At no point this season have I felt that about Chelsea when they've come up against the teams in the lower half of the table. And that, for me, kind of stands them where they are. Now, at their best, Liverpool and Chelsea probably, Liverpool and City maybe better, but Chelsea very consistent.
Speaking of title favourites, Manchester City go away to Brighton and win 4-1. Very impressive performance. This one pretty much over in the first half hour. It's 3-0 on the half hour mark. But some controversy, Shaka, surrounding the first goal. Is there a foul here on Brighton's goalie, on Gabriel Jesus?
I don't think so. I think Jesus has position and he has every right to go for this ball. So though I'm a fully paid up member of the goalkeepers union,
I don't know. I don't think you've paid your dues recently.
Well, I know I am. I'm a lifetime member. You're going over the top of a striker. You know the contact is going to come. You know you have to keep hold. I don't think Jesus did anything wrong. I think the goal is right to stand.
All right, Frank.
That
any foul
day
there
should
for you?
Come.
I agree with Shaka. I think on top of it, we are talking about the Premier League, where referees like the contact between the players. And Sanchez is the first to touch the ball and to be in contact with the ball, and therefore, you know, go into Jesus. And you see the size of the two guys, you know. I think Sanchez looks like the double of Jesus. So you have to be strong enough to keep the ball. That was really a gift for Manchester City, and that was crucial on Manchester City win, the first goal, because Brighton, we all know that, and Guardiola said that after the press conference, that he knew that it would be a tough goal, a tough game, but the first goal helped Manchester City very much so, I think.
Yeah, Frank, to that point, just how good were Manchester City in this game? Because Brighton has been surprise package of the season so far in the Premier League. They're at home. You figure they'd give Manchester City a tougher fight than they did.
Yes, I'm quite disappointed because it wasn't like a kind of a big, how do you say, counterpress from Manchester City. It wasn't overwhelming for Brighton. I think it's more Brighton who gave away many opportunities for City than City who suffocated Brighton in a big pressing, I would say. I'm disappointed because Brighton showed us, you know, the mentality that they have, and they tried in the second half. They never gave up, and I'm quite with Potter saying that they had a good performance, but it was a light performance defensively talking, where they opened the doors and gave some gift to City players. Even if I really think that City, like Chelsea, did the job, has nothing to complain about. They nothing to be criticized about as well. They've done what they had to do. But Brighton wasn't the Brighton that we have seen so far.
Jan, we got the 4-1 here. We got the 7 goals from Chelsea. We've seen Liverpool put up some big numbers of late. Are we seeing a shift in the Premier League where the top teams are really just too good for everybody else?
Well, I think it's a fair point. And Pep Guardiola said after the game, just wait till we don't score a goal. You will say that I will look for another striker. I missed the striker. But what you do see now, I think after the pandemic as well, and after you have these bigger squads, now it seems that this season going to be a big gap between the great teams and the good teams in the Premier League. Remember, Brighton, they're fourth in the Premier League. This was a top game. But what I like about Manchester City, if I may say, is that Pep Guardiola has put together players who can play in so many different positions. They can play everywhere. I mean, I grew up with total football from Holland, but if you see the player, a Gundogan, a Foden, and on the bench, there are Sterling, there's the Grealish of this world. Where do they play? I mean, these discussions we have about 4-4-2 or 4-2-3-1, I mean, these discussions will somehow die out, won't they? Because these players, they play in so many different positions, and then it's very hard and it's so unpredictable. But we saw at the ball possession, even at Brighton, it was 48-52, I think. Normally, Manchester City will have the ball a lot more, but as we saw with the goals, great goals taken by Manchester City. And I may say also that I should live the day that a goalkeeper would say that it wasn't a free kick for the goalkeeper. That day, I never thought I would experience.
Xhaka turned traitor here on ESPN. What do you think, Xhaka? Is the Premier League losing its competitive balance?
No, listen, we're talking about the defending European champions, another team that lost in the European final, and a third who were European champions, 2.5 years ago. You're talking about three of the best teams in a generation and in a league that where money defines so much. I just think we've seen this from time to time. It was only a couple of years ago we were talking about, was it Southampton that conceded 9? Mm-hmm. These results happen. I think it's more reflective of how good that top three are as opposed to this league getting less competitive. You want to talk about competitiveness? We could talk about the top four and how predictable that is. I think that's the bigger cursor here.
Go ahead, Frank.
The truth of the day is not the truth of every day. Last week or 2 weeks ago, Chelsea drew against Brentford. And really, Brentford deserved more than 3 points than Chelsea. So, you know, it's about
Chelsea,
you know,
beat
what
Brentford,
you give
Frank.
Against or what you don't give. Excuse me?
Chelsea beat Brentford.
What did you say?
Chelsea beat Brentford.
No, Chelsea beat Brentford, sorry. Yeah. Sorry, but I think really, Brentford deserved more than that. You know, you know, even I thought it was just a draw. You know, I forgot.
I agree with that.
But
I felt like
really,
I agree with that.
It was... It's clear that today the two teams who play against Chelsea and Manchester City opened the doors and gave some gifts. It was Christmas before the day. Last week against Brentford, it wasn't the case. And therefore, you cannot say that the Premier League is going to have, you know, two different levels, because every game is going to be difficult as long as the team to play against the better team don't offer them the win. So it was maybe the exception to the rule, and maybe next week it's going to be difficult for City and Chelsea if they want to beat the other team.
There you go, a club with big dreams of joining the big boys at the top of the Premier League. Newcastle, they got a golazo today in a 1-1 draw away to Crystal Palace. Callum Wilson, Xhaka, you wanted to see this one in the show. You demanded it in the rundown.
No Mike Ashley, no Steve Bruce, brand new Newcastle United. Well done, Callum Wilson. I'm not sure that's fully a bicycle kick, but it felt like it. I'm going to enjoy every second of it.
Newcastle with 25% possession.
I tell you what, it's getting better. It only weighs up from here, Seb.
A few other scores from Saturday. Watford 5-2 away win against Everton. Leeds Wolves finishes in a 1-1 draw. Southampton and Burnley finishes at 2-2.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Of course, our focus all week has been Sunday's Clásico, Real Madrid visiting Barcelona, and our coverage starts at 9 a.m. tomorrow morning. We're here on ESPN Plus as well as ESPN2 with an hour-long buildup before our coverage goes exclusively to ESPN+. The man leading that coverage tomorrow, the man you're about to hear from first right now, Dan Thomas in Barcelona.
Thank you very much, Seb. It is another beautiful evening here in Barcelona ahead of El Clásico. Luis Garcia, Stephen Manman, Ian Dark alongside me to look ahead to the game. Less than 24 hours to go. A game, of course, Macca, that you know well. Played. What are you laughing? It's true. It's, so just explain to me, like 24 hours before, obviously Real Madrid full of stars when you were playing with them. Is there a different vibe, or because they've played in all these big games before, it was just another match?
My first game, there was certainly a different vibe because we stayed centrally in Barcelona and you couldn't sleep. There was cars outside, everybody beeping the horns all through the night, people trying to ring your bedroom to wake people up constantly. So there was certainly a different vibe. There was always a lot of fans outside the hotels making noises, trying to disrupt your preparation. From then onwards, of course, we started to stay a little bit further away and it became a little bit more less chaotic. But initially, of course, there was a certain vibe about it. Everybody knew what the Clásico was about. Everybody knew their opposition to Barcelona. Certainly the Spanish lads, the Madrid-born base players. There is a special chemistry for this game. There is a genuine hatred for Barcelona. And you certainly felt that as an outsider coming in and joining into this group to play your first game.
When you look at your time at Real Madrid, the goal against Barcelona in the Champions League semi-final, I imagine, is one that people talk to you about probably just as much as Champions League.
Yes, because it was such an important game. I always remember, I've said this on numerous occasions, my teammates after the game were celebrating like crazy, and I'd never seen that before. I'd seen them celebrate because we'd won Champions League, but this was a celebration plus. And I was thinking to myself, you know, what on earth's gone on? Because that was only the first leg, of course, a two-legged
affair. It was the second goal, wasn't it, 2-0?
Yes, but we were at, you know, the first game was at Barcelona. We knew then, because we'd won 2-0 away at Barcelona in the first leg, we were virtually in the final. We were that confident because we knew we were better than them. And the Spanish players were going crazy in the dressing room. And it took me by surprise, really, because of the victory. And it says, you know, they don't win often at the Camp Nou. Yeah. So when they do win, you know, they really, really enjoy themselves. And subsequently went on and lifted the Champions League that time.
It was a young Luis Garcia throwing darts at
listen, I understand that for people who is outside, it's 3 points or it's a good game or whatever. But it's 2 weeks of peace for the guys who are living in Madrid, for them to don't talk about, to don't feel the pressure of the people on the street. You can go and walk around, go for dinner, go for lunch, and people will put a red carpet for you to go in. Yep. If you lose or even draw, it's not nice to be around. So that's why they celebrate so much.
And Ian, if you've caught, of course, called many games. The important bit, this says ESPN don't touch, by the way, in case you're wondering what's on that bit of paper. You've called many big games. This still remains one of the biggest, doesn't it?
Yeah, there might be no Cristiano Ronaldo anymore, no Lionel Messi.
Well,
but this is still
a negative.
This is a massive game. This is the most watched game in the world. Everybody I've spoken to before I left England to come to Barcelona said, "Oh, I wish I could go with you. Can you get me a spare ticket?" Yep. It still has that kind of magnetism, that appeal. And I think there'll be goals in this game because I wouldn't trust either defence. And I think it's going to be a bit of a thriller, really.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? That you do look at both defences and there's vulnerabilities there. We talked about the crowd keeping Macca awake when he first came here. The crowd have got a big part to play tomorrow. How much are they going to be on Barca's back, or how much are they going to come together and go, come on, we need to support this young team?
Hopefully, and I think the board of Barcelona, we saw the chairman, John Laporta, just trying to bring the people to the game because he knows how important it is for the players to feel that support. We all know that there is a misconnection between the supporters and then how the team is playing at the moment, but it's El Clásico. I mean, it's a special game. Maybe they can bounce back. It's true that at the moment, there is a lot of uncertainties if the team is going to continue, is going to get that consistency that is needed to this team to maybe, why not win the title or maybe at least fight for it. But at the moment, there is a lot of doubts in the city. And hopefully we can see a full crowd tomorrow. And we all enjoy that atmosphere that is created because the stadium is just beautiful.
I think, you know, this could be a turning point for Barcelona. This is how they're going to see this. I mean, they're like a big liner that's hit the rocks. They can sail into some calmer waters here, get a real morale-boosting win. And, you know, they've just recorded their first back-to-back wins. this could be their day if the crowd isn't apathetic like it has been for the recent games. I think it's going to be much more like fall, and this game might be a spark point for them.
And what happens in the initial moments of this game, like a big challenge or a bad refereeing call, I think that could spark this crowd life, you know, pro Barcelona. Or if Real Madrid score early, then they could turn.
In the end, the crowds will do their best to get behind the team, and then they will respond to what is happening on the pitch. Yeah. That's what it'll be. The initial periods, they'll be booing Real Madrid, they'll be cheering Barcelona, and then they'll watch the game. I watched Barcelona beat Kiev in the Champions League, and they won 1-0, and they weren't comfortable enough, but the crowds were still not happy. They were never going to lose that game, but because they weren't seeing lots of goals, lots of chances created, they saw quite a mundane game. They were still whistling and booing at times. So if they start the game and they play really well and they score a goal, of course everybody will be get behind them. But on the other side, if Madrid dominate, which there's a good chance they will, and if Madrid score, which there's a good chance they will, it's whether they score first or second or whatever happens. But if Madrid score first and dominate the game, the crowd will flip, no problem at all, the fact that it's Real Madrid. And they'll get on the backs because it's now quite trendy to get in, you know, to criticise Barcelona, and they're easy to criticise because of the problems they've got. It's an incredible situation where they are now. The Barcelona of 2, 3, 4 years ago to the Barcelona of now, just because we've had 18 months of the pandemic, you know, to be in so much disarray.
Yep.
It's absolutely phenomenal, and it's incredible that it's got to this point.
I don't think on this occasion on Sunday there'll be any pig's heads will be involved.
Yeah.
You, of course, came off the bench in that game, Mac. Was there any idea that the atmosphere was going to be like that against Luis Figo, and, of course, in his first game return?
Well, no, of course not. Not with the objects that were thrown onto the pitch. I don't think anybody in their right mind would think that that would happen. But, yes, we knew there was a lot of unrest in Barcelona. We knew that, Euro notes were made up with Luis's name on them.
Yep.
Flags were made up for them. But we didn't think it would descend into that sort of anarchy on the pitch. And the year later was the same. We walked off the pitch the year later. So it wasn't just a single affair. Yes, the pig's heads, the whiskey bottles, the mobile phones, the golf balls, everything got thrown onto the pitch that day. It was disgusting. And it got brushed over. And it's quite like a funny story to tell now.
Right.
But that wasn't the first. You know, that didn't stop them. It happened again the year later. And, it was a bad time in Spanish football, that type of nonsense. And it was so you knew there was a hatred, you knew there was a general unrest between the two crowds of fans, but never that bad. I mean, I don't think anybody can take it that serious. You can't even it shouldn't be anywhere near a football field, things like that.
When you got the call to come on in the second half, is that something you embraced atmosphere
I was more than happy with that. I'd played in Liverpool, Manchester United games, Liverpool Everton games as a Liverpool born player, so it was second nature to me. I'd heard everything and seen everything on a football field. The fact that a pig's head came on as well.
Did you go over and take any corners, by the way, when you came on?
No, well, that was the thing. It disrupts your pattern of play.
Yeah, Luis, the game was terrible.
The game was awful. Luis was taking our corners and he couldn't take them anymore.
Right.
You know, and everything was getting rained on. The security guards were nearly on the pitch trying to stop people. So it spoiled the game to a certain extent. And no one really remembers the game. They just remember the objects on the pitch. And you shouldn't be talking about that in a football match.
No. And what was Luis, because you were close to him, what was he like afterwards?
Fine.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Anybody who knows Luis Figo knows he's...
it was Joyce, nice, that situation. Yeah. Even Joyce. Yeah.
He thought it was ridiculous. He knew what was coming. And he knew the whole scenario of, you know, if Florentino Perez was going to win the presidency, Luis was going to come. So he knew what was in the offing months before, and he knew that he'd have to face Barcelona if he ever turned up in a Real Madrid shirt, and he knew it was never going to be good.
Yeah.
You know, on the flip side, if you're a Liverpool player and you go and play for Man United, you know you're not going to be welcome back. You know you're going to be hated in an instant by the other fans who've supported you for a long time. So it's not a problem for players nowadays.
What was it like from a Barcelona perspective, watching everything that was going on at Real Madrid? Obviously, this new kind of Galactico era, the likes of Zidane coming, they had Ronaldo, and then adding to that Beckham, of course, later on. What was that like looking out into that?
Yeah, of course, when you see the amount of player, the quality, the sound that they create around Real Madrid, of course, it was a worry for Barcelona. But if you have a look in the other side, you are Barcelona. So you have to understand that the rivalry is going to be there and you're going to be fighting, because now we can see the league is very competitive all the way. We were talking today about Real Sociedad, Osasuna, they are Sevilla, they are fighting to be at the top. But back then it was about Real Madrid and Barcelona. So yeah. At the end of the days, it doesn't matter how many players they can bring. It's going to be about El Clásico and maybe a couple more games. The rest of the games, they were actually kind of easy to win. So, yeah, it's a lot of noise, but at the end, no one of the two teams were dropping points, and it was about the last maybe two, three games.
I feel like over the last couple of days, Barcelona, we've talked a lot about, and not so much actually about Real Madrid. They've kind of come into this match under the radar. They're not exactly setting the world on fire. Looking at their season, we've seen flashes of brilliance from them, haven't we? But to be consistently considered as the favourites to win the title, they're going to have to start getting results back to back to back over weeks.
Well, you're talking about a team here who lost to the Moldovan team, yep. Sheriff yes. Tiraspol in the Champions League, lost to Espanyol. Villarreal had the better chances when they came to the Bernabeu. So Real Madrid might be favourites, but they are far from big favourites, I would say, in the game, especially playing away from home here. But I think they do have a couple of real trump cards. Benzema's playing brilliantly in every game he plays. He's scoring in nearly every game he plays. Vinicius Junior scored a wonder goal yeah. the other night in the Champions League. He's very, very quick. He's obviously maturing. So can Barcelona's defence cope with those two? Not sure.
It's very different to the Real Madrid side that we started talking about when we were together in Spain last, because of course they had Benzema, Bale and Hazard. Bale and Hazard obviously now on the sidelines, and you've got Vinicius Junior who's come in and kind of taken yeah. that role and run with it.
Yeah, he had a lot of criticism, didn't he? But I think people had to remember that he was only a baby and he's still growing into his role, and there was a lot of big names around him. He's seems to have flourished in the summer, and he's started the season really, really well. Every time we've seen him, very exciting. He knows when to take people on. He knows when to take people on and then pass the ball. He's not just this person who'll run and run and run and eventually run out of the stadium yes. if the gates are open. He knows now when to pass, when to move, when to shoot, when to put on a play for his teammate. And he's been excellent. And, you know, Karim Benzema, as we've said for a long time, just keeps on being in the right place at the right time and scoring goals. And, you know, you cannot see Madrid scoring, you know, a few goals. So if that's the case, Barcelona are going to have to score threes and fours yeah. to even get into this game. Because if you've seen any form recently, Madrid will score tomorrow. They yes. will score.
Mm. How much credit should Benzema take for what he's done with his side since Cristiano Ronaldo has left?
Wow. All of it. Because it's true that he had Zinedine Zidane, now he's got Ancelotti. But since Cristiano Ronaldo left, he got that the place that he really deserved, because we saw a fantastic Benzema all around Cristiano Ronaldo, even Gareth Bale at some points. He was a little bit underrated in my opinion, because he was doing so many things, but he was not in the right position. And now he realized that he needs to be right there in the box, near where everything happens, and with the quality and the intelligent football intelligence that he's got, he's just fantastic. Now he knows where he has to create, so drops a little bit, gets the ball, bring it up, because sometimes Real Madrid got problems on the build-up. But suddenly he's always in the right position. He's yeah. always inside the box, arriving second line in the perfect moment. So I think the experience of being on the shade of Cristiano Ronaldo is been, I think, even better for him, because now he can shine and he is enjoying. I mean, he's not getting injured. He's playing every single week in and week out. He's scoring, he's creating. And he's not that kind of selfish player, striker that he always wants the ball and wants to score by himself. No, he's happy just to give an assist.
And I think for the first time, I mean, what, 10 years he's been at the club, he's now the main, he's main, number yeah. one, isn't he?
Yeah, it's now not even close. You could say he's number one in La Liga.
Well, yes, but he's the first person on the team sheet. He was never that at Real Madrid. It was Sergio Ramos, it yes. was Cristiano, of course, it was other people. Now, who's the first person they look to? Who's the only person we talk about really in a Real Madrid shirt? Yeah. Luka Modric is quiet, of course, as a person, so you don't necessarily talk about him. Toni Kroos has been injured. Casemiro, of course, has been there for a while. But the one person you always focus on is Benzema now. And I think he really enjoys that role, being the star man.
You mentioned the midfield players there. The old firm are back, aren't they, now that Kroos is fit? Modric, Casemiro, Kroos. That's an interesting battle, isn't it? Alongside Gavi, who's 2 months past his 17th birthday, and he's going to be making his debut, by the look of it, in this fixture. Busquets, you know, the old soldier there as well. that midfield battle is interesting because that is an ageing midfield, as good that Real have. I mean, I remember Chelsea made them look really slow in the Champions League last season.
I think they are slow, Ian. I think that goes without saying. I think no one will argue with you. The age of the players, they are slowing down. It's just whether Busquets, Frenkie de Jong and Gavi, if he plays, and if that is the three against three, how they match up. I think they match up quite closely tomorrow. I don't think there'd be a huge difference. I think Sergio Busquets is a wonderful footballer, as good as what Real Madrid have got. Frenkie de Jong as well, it's the same. It's just what happens on the day, who controls the ball a bit more, who's got a little bit more confidence, who's got that little bit more bravery that can go forwards with the ball and make that killer pass.
I think that the difference over there in that midfield, it could make Frankie de Jong, because he's the one who makes a little bit more runs. Mm-hmm. He's a box-to-box player, and in those runs, and I think the Ronald Koeman has made kind of a very important point over there, is you, when the other guys on the left side, say there is Busquets or Gavi or Alva, get the ball, you just start making the run. Start making the run, because that's the difference between have more people at the front. There is no centre forward. There is no anymore a player who can stick there, wait for it. We've seen Zlatan, Henry, so many important players at the front. But at the moment, there is no one. And those runs from De Jong are very important tomorrow. And that's the key point for Barcelona, if they want to at least score a goal, because I don't see it coming if it's not from him or maybe Ansu Fati.
If I was to ask you who would your front three be for Barcelona, who are the most dangerous front three? We know Ansu Fati's just come back, Aguero's back, Luke de Jong, Memphis Depay. Who would your front three be in
ideal
world?
For tomorrow?
Yes, for tomorrow now.
If everybody is available.
Everybody's available.
Even Dembele.
No, he's not available.
Okay, but I was thinking.
Just get Messi back.
I thought that he was the from the squad at the moment. No, from the ones are really now. Ansu Fati, Aguero, Depay, and Serginho at the moment.
I think he'll do that again, won't he? Because he played well against Valencia, didn't he?
Very well.
Yeah,
he's a guy who is he knows how to play over there. In Ajax, was playing in as a winger, and he likes to go 1v1. He doesn't like to track back. You can see when he's playing that he struggles to track back the player. So when he's over there in the right side, you can see he goes inside, he goes outside, he's got a good touch with the right foot, so you can see good crosses. So I think he will repeat the same player.
So on yesterday's show, you went for a draw. I imagine you're sticking with that.
Yeah.
Because you can't go against Barcelona, obviously.
Obviously.
Maka?
I think Madrid will win. I think Barcelona will score. I'm not saying Madrid are this fantastic team. I don't think they are. I think defensively they're really weak, Madrid, and I think they're vulnerable. I just think they'll score more goals. I think they'll outscore Barcelona.
Yeah, I think that's the problem for Barcelona, really. They'll have a lot of the ball. Can they convert that into goals? They couldn't against Atletico in that game. But I've got a feeling they're going to pull out a good performance. It's just a hunch. 2-2.
Oh, wow. Look at that.
Hey.
Thank you very much, boys. We will now go back to Connecticut and link up with Seb once again in the studio.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Borussia Dortmund 3-1 winners away against Arminia Bielefeld on Saturday, and that with no Erling Haaland, who continues his recovery from a hip injury. Golazos in this one from Jude Bellingham and Mats Hummels, as well as a penalty from Emre Can. Let's bring back Jan Agafjorthof. Jan, no Erling Haaland, no problem for Borussia Dortmund.
Now, when I was there today and I spoke to the management before the game, and they were a bit, I'm not saying they were afraid of the game, but they were afraid of the occasion, coming from Amsterdam, losing 4-0. And in many games this season, there have been trouble backward. They've conceded a lot of goals, but as you saw, first of all, a penalty. Emre Can was to take it. It would have been Hall. It could have been Royce. But it was Emre Can. And then Mats Hummels. I mean, he is a beautiful footballer. Then and again, he can't defend. But he is a fantastic football player doing that volley. And Jude Bellingham, that goal, that was Messi class, wasn't it? And I will learn you a German word today. I spoke to Marco Rose after the game, and he said that Jude Bellingham was a Dauerbrenner. And Dauerbrenner is German and means a guy who runs all the time and wants to run all the time. And I guess that is a good definition of Jude Bellingham.
Shaka, you want to try your pronunciation
on
that?
No, thanks. No.
Jan, since we got you here, there seems to be some doubt on the timetable for Erling Haaland's return from this hip injury. What more can you tell us? And there's some big games coming up here for Dortmund. They're going to be able to manage without him?
I can tell you that when he came back after injury one against Mainz, he scored two goals. There was always an eye contact between Marco Rose and himself to take him off, to kind of reduce the chances to get any kind of injury. But he played on, and then he played a whole game, scored a third goal, as we remember. Going into the Ajax game, he felt a bit in his hip or in that area, as you do as a footballer. You're getting stiff. And then into that game, he played 90 minutes there as well. And then the big shock the next day was that it's shown that this stiffness and this thing that he had is nothing directly to do with injury number one, but showed that he need, as Dortmund said, several weeks. That was bad news for Norway because we got two games in November that he will miss, but it's even worse. And I was there today. And what I've been told and what I understand, we may see that Erling Haaland has played his last game in 2021. And we will see how his body will respond to the treatment. But you can see some games there at the end of December. And the first game of the Rückrunde, the round two in Germany, starts 8th of January. So I think now there is a chance that that game against Ajax could be the last game we see Erling Haaland this year, which is terrible news for Dortmund because they need him up there, because when they keep conceding goals, they need someone to score goals, and they can't just rely on beauty goals like today from Hummels and Bellingham.
The good times continue for Bayern Munich as they win 4-0 over Hoffenheim. Elsewhere in Germany, Gnabry, Choupo-Moting, Coman, your goal scorers, Robert Lewandowski as well, who scored an absolute golazo. Let's listen to him after the match.
Robert Lewandowski, congratulations to the victory and congratulations to this wonderful goal. Could you describe us this one?
I saw on the middle line that the ball was in the air, and I know that Thomas Müller go forward and I want to play to him. Then he fight with the defender, and before I got the ball, I know that the goalkeeper staying 3-4 meters before the line, and I decide to shoot on the target, and it's a beautiful goal. And I think that we have so many situations today, but it's this kind of game that we could try a lot of things.
In a few days, the Ballon d'Or will be assigned. In my opinion, there's no reason why don't you get it, will not get it. Can you see a reason?
It's one dream to be there, to try to win this trophy, because it's I know how difficult it is also for the guy who not coming from the big city, big country. I mean, the football country was with the big history, but I am there, I have the big chance to maybe to win this, and I'm grateful that I can be there, and I think that my performance since also in 2020, everything what we did, what I did with my team, with my teammates, show enough to thinking about this.
Jan, no Julian Nagelsmann on the sidelines for Bayern in this one. The coach still in quarantine after testing positive for COVID-19. Didn't seem to make a difference. Bayern's still rolling.
It doesn't. And the big news here in Germany today is, of course, Joshua Kimmich talking about quarantine. He doesn't want to take the vaccine. And that is making the headlines all over here, because they then feel he's not safe at the Bayern camp. But as you were saying, the last week they've been joking in Germany, this is the only team that don't even need a coach to win a football game. And Topmüller, who is the assistant coach, who is the son of a former Topmüller, who was the coach in Leverkusen, he's done it brilliantly. He's sitting in his kitchen, by the way, made in a studio there, and he's kind of calling the bench, as he's saying. So they got everything under control, and Bayern at the moment, they are frightening. Having said that, Hoffenheim today, Frank Leboeuf talked about giving Christmas presents out. Hoffenheim gave them presents all day long today.
Quick look then at the top half of the Bundesliga. Borussia Dortmund just 1 point back of Bayern Munich. through 9 matches played for each Freiburg with a big win over Wolfsburg. That moves them into the top 4.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What a Sunday of football we've got headed our way across Europe. Of course, Manchester United hosting Liverpool at Old Trafford. How about that? Liverpool away, favorites over Manchester United. For more on this one, let's get it back out to the crew in Barcelona. Dan Thomas leading the way.
Thank you very much, Seb. As we're sat with two former Liverpool players, it'd be rude not to look ahead to the Manchester United game on Sunday as well. Easy 3 points, no problem, Macca, sorted?
No, I don't think it's easy. I think Liverpool are the better team. I think United are a little bit lost between how they want to play and what style they want to play and whether they want to play 4-2-4, 4-3-3 or whatever, because they've got an abundance of centre-forwards. I actually think playing Liverpool will suit them. Liverpool will dominate possession. United will counter-attack and they could use the pace of a Sancho, a Rashford, a Greenwood, whoever's going to play a Ronaldo. So I think playing Liverpool is an easier game for them than playing someone like Brentford, where right. they need to make chances. But I still think Liverpool are the better team.
How aware were you of the Liverpool-United rivalry when you went there? How much did it strike you on that first?
Yeah, I think it was kind of what Macca was mentioning before about when you arrived to Madrid and they explained a little bit the rivalry between Barcelona and Real Madrid. That's what happened with me when I arrived there. Everybody started talking about, listen, this is the game. This is the one we have to win because this happened 10 years ago and 20 years ago. Yeah. This is what happened and then you start feeling it on the streets. You can feel it straight away. Everybody's talking about that game for 2-3 weeks just before the game. So at the end, you start feeling it, and when you arrive to the stadium, you realize how important it is for all the supporters, for the players who are born over there in the city. And you enjoy it because it's definitely a war. When I was on the pitch, I was really sometimes scared of what is happening. The tackle that they were there, I mean, I never seen that before. So I wasn't used to that kind of intensity. And well, it was a tough game, the first one.
It's quite the example of where both teams are coming on from that, Ian, in the fact that Liverpool is so high at the moment, United so low, that Liverpool going to Old Trafford and winning isn't really a big deal anymore.
Well, it'll be a big deal for Liverpool if they go there, believe me. I mean, this is a massive game, as the boys have just said there. And Liverpool are scoring, what, 3 a game at the moment, almost without fail. Salah's scored in, I think, the last 9 Liverpool games. Nobody's ever done that before. Are they going to be able to contain them? I don't think they are, because I've covered Manchester United a couple of times this season, even against Villarreal at Old Trafford. Villarreal looked like scoring with every attack. They led in 4 last week at Leicester. I don't think that defence is going to be able to cope with Liverpool's attack on the day. So I've got a pretty strong feeling Liverpool will win.
United just want to play the last 20 minutes of this game, isn't it? Considering what we've seen from them already. But Liverpool just go into this game, as Ian says, with that swagger and with Salah. Just an incredible form.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting talking about the Clásico, how the fans react as well if Liverpool dominate and Liverpool score goals, because the fans are almost, you feel it. Yes, they got away with it midweek against Atalanta, but you can hear the noise already. When you speak to Manchester United fans, unfortunately, they haven't got a lot of confidence in the manager. And if things start to go against them, you can feel that they will quickly turn, even the fact that they're playing Liverpool, who are their arch rivals, because Liverpool are really enjoyable to watch. They play football the right way. They want to attack. They want to score goals. And they're secretly, the fans' second favourite teams because they're so entertaining.
The thing is, Ian, as well, obviously, we've heard numerous times the board are happy with Ollie. You know, they're not going to sack him. They're happy with the job that he does. He does everything right with regards to what he has to say off the pitch. Yet the fans could be the reason that the board will have to turn. And this could be a game that could be the catalyst for that.
Well, he is under pressure, I think, among the fans, not from inside Old Trafford. Every word you hear from that is, he's our man. But there is a feeling, is he the man who's going to take Manchester United to where they're going to go? So his team at the moment, the big job he's got, I think, is they look like 11 strangers out there.
Yeah.
Some wonderful players, but are they a team? They haven't really looked like it so far. That has to happen pretty quickly, I think, if they're going to achieve the kind of goals they want. They, you know, the way the results are going, they're struggling to be in the top six a bit.
Let's get some predictions then. Ian?
Well, I think Liverpool are going to win. I think they've just got too much firepower.
Give me a score.
3-1.
I'll go with 3-1 as well.
Yeah, just copying Ian.
Yeah.
I'll think for yourself.
I like that. I put a blue jacket on because he put a blue jacket.
You just want to get it done and gone. Yeah. Get in the war.
4-1.
Luis?
I'm going to change a little bit because I think the Man United still kind of have something. That space they can get in behind the Liverpool is tricky. I'm going to go for a 3-1 for Liverpool. Sorry about it.
So United are going to win.
That's it. Yeah. Exactly.
So there you go.
That's it then. Back to you in the studio, Seb.
All right, so the boys in Barcelona then all expecting goals in tomorrow's match. Frank, I know you're a defender, but on yesterday's show, you said this one would end 0-0. You want to revisit that at all?
I don't know. No, it was just a feeling, you know. I predicted as well that never Watford would be able to win against Everton. You see how good I was, you know, and the feeling that I have. So you know, it's just about football. What can we know? And why 0-0 is impossible? You know, it can be a fantastic game with lots of chances, both sides, and never being able to score against two fantastic goalkeepers. So it's possible. I think Liverpool is above Manchester United, but I also think that the win that they got in the Champions League, is going to help the Red Devils to rise their level and maybe cope with Liverpool. So we'll see. We'll see tomorrow.
Jan, from the Manchester United perspective, what's the right approach for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer?
I think this is a perfect game for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. You just need to play Liverpool at the moment. Yes, the boys said in Spain that they're playing their arch rival and that could start something among the fans. But you know this is perfect. He's under pressure, the Norwegian, and he will probably win this. That is how it goes. Liverpool can have a great, great game, and then there will be something happening at the end, and they will win it 1-0.
Mm. Perfect game for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, Shaka? You should see it that way?
No, I don't. And listen, and I just think Liverpool are the better of the two teams, no question. Given this derby and the history to it, the emotion maybe plays a part. You look at what happened in midweek, both teams playing the 3-2 wins in European action, but both come out of those games with very different feelings about how it all went. I thought you saw United at their best against Atalanta when they went behind and had to take chances going forward. More attack-minded through midfield, you cannot afford to do against Liverpool. I just don't think Manchester United are good enough at the back to cope with Liverpool's front three. And though Liverpool have their own defensive problems, I think Liverpool are better going forward, better at that end of the park. They win the game.
Cannot wait for tomorrow's show.
No, can I?
It's going to be a good one. We have so much good football on the schedule for Sunday. And, of course, we will be across all of it here on ESPN FC. Another reminder, you can catch us 7 days a week.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
To Serie A, where AC Milan actually blew a two-goal lead and then took it right back. 4-2 winners away against Bologna. This is the rare match that features a Zlatan goal, Shaka, and a Zlatan own goal.
Interesting.
How about that? So here's a look then at the top of the Serie A table. Milan top for now. They do have a match in hand over pretty much everyone else. Big game tomorrow then between Napoli and Roma. Napoli perfect so far this season, 8-for-8. They're going to visit Roma, of course, coming off that shocking 6-1 defeat in the Europa Conference League against Bodø Glimt of Norway. That chuckle that you hear in the background, that's our resident Norwegian, Jan Agerfjord, who could was actually at this game. His interview with Jose Mourinho, of course, has gone viral. Maybe he could translate some of what we're seeing in these headlines. Jan, I mentioned your interview. It's gone viral, and then we're hearing more from Mourinho in his latest press conference. It's pretty much the same thing he told you.
Yeah, he hammered his team as a big time. I was standing there. I just have to explain what this is. This is the reigning champion of Norway, but it's still Watford of Norwegian football. This is not a biggest team, and they are challengers. They sold all their strikers, and they're still now chasing for the goal again. Kjetil Knudsen, their coach, is so good, and they're playing North Norway. This is so far north that the Santa Claus can be guest of honor when they play a football game. But listen, I went there on Thursday, and I've experienced a lot of things in football. But before the game, it was minus degrees. It was snow in the air. It was so windy, you can't imagine. And then Jose Mourinho, the two-time Champions League winner, comes there with his Italian players. And it just got worse and worse. It was 3-1, and everybody thought, well, this is a sensation. And then 4-1, 5-1, 6-1, and people were looking at themselves. What is going on? And after the game, I was doing the interviews with all the players from Bodø Glimt. They were shocked. We beat them 6-1, and Jose Mourinho was standing there, and I thought that I should give him a present, so I did that before the game. So I got a Norwegian salmon, and I got the date of the game and the number of Bodø Glimt against Roma. But as I was standing there, I was thinking, I can't give him this salmon, because this date is probably the worst date in the history of Jose Mourinho. So while I was standing there interviewing the Kjetil Knudsen of Bodø Glimt, I told him, you know that guy standing next to you? I didn't dare to say his name. I was supposed to give him a salmon, but I think I will give it to you, because I thought that he would have knocked me down. But in the interview, it was typical Mourinho again. He went all the way, and he hammered his team. They're saying that Jose Mourinho is sometimes parking the bus. Well, this time he took all the players and threw them under the bus. It was unbelievable. It's one of the most amazing things I've ever seen as a football reporter.
And Jan, he doubled down on it today. I mean, this isn't the first that we've seen of this from Jose Mourinho, but are you surprised that this early in his time at Roma, he's already seemingly turned on his players?
Well, there is an available job at Newcastle, isn't there? Isn't this his program? Isn't this what he's doing? But mind you, of course, when you lose 6-1, this is a big... And one of the headlines you saw there in the Bild-Zeitung in Germany, they had all the big coaches of the football world. Have they had something like this before? And yes, they have. Even Jurgen Klopp lost 7-2 to Aston Villa, didn't he, some time ago in the pandemic? So this has happened before. And you see in Jose Mourinho that he's under pressure, because this was very, very embarrassing. If you beat Napoli tomorrow, something is forgotten. But my last question is, you saw in the interview, I've asked him, so can you promise all Norwegians, can you promise Bodø Glimt that when they play you in Olympia Stadium, you will play with your best team? Of course I will. Of course I will. So be ready for the big, big revenge.
Jose Mourinho, then. We hope he's a man of his word. At least the fans in Norway do, so they get to see him. Okay, so here's the Sunday Serie A schedule. Boy, some big ones. We mentioned Roma-Napoli. Of course, that for the top of the table. But the Derby d'Italia there, Inter against Juve. Inter right now third, Juventus seventh in the Serie A table. Speaking of tables, here's a look at the top half of Ligue 1, PSG. No surprise, already seemingly running away with it, but they'll face Marseille on Sunday, Le Classique. Of course, a few know the depths of this rivalry, quite like our Frank Leboeuf, who we welcome back into the show. Frank, a big gap between these two teams. What are the chances for Marseille in this one?
That's very funny, because that's maybe the first time, well, on the Marseille view point of view, that they think that they can cop and maybe disturb Paris. It's been 10 years since Marseille didn't get a win against Paris Saint-Germain at home. They won against Paris Saint-Germain away from home last season, but they didn't win for like 10 years. First, you know, it's funny because you call it the classic. And because we have no pride and I guess no personality in France, we call it the Classico, like in Spain. And it's a big day tomorrow, you know, coached by two Argentinian, two teams coached by two Argentinian coaches, both from the Newell's Old Boys. It's going to be a big rivalry. It's going to be with a big held with a big temper. It's huge. You know that some people, some friends who love football, didn't know that we are the real Classico tomorrow. But they knew that they were the classic, as you say, Marseille against Paris Saint-Germain. So it's huge in France. And for the first time, some people are saying that because the way Sampaoli plays, wants his team to play against all of the team, they have maybe a chance to disturb and to win against Paris Saint-Germain. And there is one big question, is either if either Neymar will play or not, because that's the main concern that they have. And if he's not playing, Di Maria will play for sure. If he plays, will he play with four forward players with Di Maria in, or will he go for 4-3-3? So we'll have all the answers tomorrow.
Speaking of all the answers, you get all the answers on the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast. Of course, they'll be all over the Le Classique, I should say.
Okay.
Le Classique, right. as Frank told us there. On the next edition of the show, that drops Monday. Look at the guests they're getting. I mean, big name guests. A weekend of Clásicos all over, of derby matches. How about this? We got one in Texas as well. The Texas Derby. Well, one of the Texas Derbies.
Okay.
There's multiple.
Right.
Austin FC, Houston Dynamo. That one's Sunday, 5 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and, of course, streaming live on the ESPN app.
How come? Football Americas!
There it is.
New episodes streaming weekly.
Yep.
With our very own Sebastian Salazar and Hercules Gomez.
You do a better Football Americas promo than I do.
Oh, well.
We will be all across, of course, all the weekend action, including that game out of MLS.
You can hear Sebi blushing. You can hear Sebi blushing.
Austin and Houston. All right, so our work here is done, Chaka.
Oh, good. Okay.
Our work here is done. But the boys are not done in Barcelona.
We
got Dan, Ian, Maka, and of course Luis Garcia standing by to take your questions on Extra Time. Enjoy.
Welcome in then to the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you as always for your questions. What a lineup we have. Mac has been in a bit of a bad mood, hasn't he, Ian? Like overall.
He has, yeah.
Normally he's got
a The last time I saw him like that was on Euro 2012 in Gdansk.
Whoa.
In the morning.
That's 9 years ago.
Yeah, I still remember it.
I never get up early
he's
in the morning.
He's cheering
you
up
know
now.
That.
He's cheering up now.
It's because it's night time.
It's because it's the
I
last,
start to liven
the
up.
The last segment now.
Because I'm going out.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I'm off out.
Yeah, out to do some research.
Exactly.
Sorted.
Yeah. Check the pitch. check the Camp Nou house tonight.
Luis, if someone's referred to you as Garcia, but there we go. Garcia, who is the greatest player who ever played in El Clásico and why is it Messi?
Well, actually, of course, we have to mention Lionel Messi, but it's not going to be in this El Clásico. And for me, there is one that I think it was special, that it was Ronaldinho.
Yeah.
I enjoy so much watching him play against Real Madrid. And once again, we mentioned the other day, when Ronaldinho one day put everybody at the Bernabeu to make a standing ovation, it was something special. And well, we have to mention him because he was one of the greatest.
Not Maka then?
Sorry?
Not Maka.
What
about greatest players to play in the Clásico?
Oh, okay.
It's got quite a good
You've had a go at me for
you?
2012. You've got a long memory. Now you're having another little pop.
Maka, during your playing time, how different was it from representing Liverpool to Real Madrid?
How different was it? Well, I mean, when you played football, you wanted to go out and win. I was born in Liverpool, so it had a different mentality because, of course, I grew up loving Everton, of course, but Liverpool were always there, and my friends supported Liverpool and Everton, so it was always on my consciousness. And then to go and play for them, and you know, I won the FA Cup, and when I was 20 years of age, that was extra special because I'd been to Wembley numerous times as a fan, watching Everton, watching Liverpool in the 80s because they were at Wembley every single season, in one cup or another. So that was very, very, very special. Living in the city, of course, you had an affinity, you had a bond with the people who lived next door to you and around you. So I knew, you know, a lot of people. But once it came to, you know, walking over the white line and going out onto the pitch, I wanted to win every single game I played. Of course, that's not feasible, but I always wanted to win and play well and, you know, do your best. So that wasn't strange at all. I adored my time in Madrid and I adored my time in Liverpool. So it wasn't a huge difference, actually, as in the playing aspect of the game.
You surprised that not more English players made that step?
Was no.
It 99 no. You went? Was it, like, since then? How many? Like,
yeah, not many, but I think if you look at it, Dan, the circumstances, I mean, it might be different for Luis going into England, but the circumstances in England for players playing, going and leaving abroad, firstly, the Premier League is very strong. Secondly, the facilities are probably the best in the world across the board.
Right.
You know, people, if you've got young children and they're in school and your wife doesn't want to leave, there are aspects where they think, well, you know, why should I bother? People want... You know, talk about Harry Kane wanting to leave, but if he's got young family and they're all nicely happy in school and they're near, you know, his wife's family and things like that, you don't want to uproot and go and play abroad.
You had a bit of a sense of adventure, though, didn't you? And you learnt Spanish. And
yeah, and also it worked out for me. My wife had just finished all her studies and we didn't have any children at that time, so it was a lot easier of a decision to make to say, right, now's the time because it's perfect. We're not upsetting anybody else. We're not uprooting anybody. It's just me and you. And if it fails, we can come back. Mm. So we went into it and jumped in both feet and we knew that there was no problems. I moved into a house straight away because I didn't want to live in a hotel. So it was easy to do that when you haven't got children and you have to try and find schools from the different age groups with different friendship groups. So, it was ideal for me. But I fully appreciate and understand why a lot of English players don't want to, because they don't need to. The Premier League is one of the best paid. You know, they get looked after better than any other league in the world. And I can see why
Trippier people...
He's done amazing. And I'd love more people to play abroad. If you get the chance to play for Barcelona or Real Madrid, it's not even a question for me. Because those teams do not come knocking. So if they do and you have the opportunity, you just say, thank you very much, where did we sign? And enjoy the experience.
What was the biggest difference for you, Luis? Not on the pitch, but off the pitch. From living day to day in Barcelona and their passion for football in Liverpool.
That's different. I think for me, living in Barcelona, that is a shiny city where you are always on the streets. The weather is fantastic, food is fantastic. You got your friend, you got your family, and you go to Liverpool. That now is beautiful city, but back in 2004, with all my respect, was a little bit tricky to adapt. Yeah. There was no cinemas, there was no restaurant, there was no
was there electricity.
No cinema in Liverpool.
No.
The weather. It was just dark.
It was good. Actually, it was good for me because you have to focus on football. That's it. There was nothing else. It's wake up, go to training, rest, and back again. So you have to focus 100%. So it was very good but the lifestyle, it was very tough to adapt.
Right. Just upset so many Liverpool fans.
The Odeon, Liverpool. That's where to go.
No, there are restaurants, there are cinemas. He just lived in the posh area.
That's why he played so well, you see, because he
no cinemas. Trust me.
Luis and Stevie, does Salah get into your all-time Liverpool 11?
Yeah, I mean, in the position he plays, he's up against, you know, generational players: Dalglish, Rush, Fowler, Owen, Suarez, Fernando Torres. At the times were fantastic players in a number of seasons. But I think the fact that we're talking about Mo Salah at this moment in time and we're speaking about him being the form he's in is arguably the best player in the world. If you take that line, the best player in the world, he has to be in it, doesn't he?
Yeah.
The fact that he hasn't been there for 10 years like Dalglish, Rush or Fowler is one thing, but he's well on his way to doing that, and he's indicated that he'd like to stay for longer. But I think his form and the fact that he scored that many goals, he'd probably be, at this moment in time, if you're asking me, you'd have to say yes.
It is a tough team to get into, though, isn't it? The all-time greatest Liverpool team.
Stevie Nicholls there, obviously.
Of course he is.
Our boy is.
Of course,
there.
Of course he is. Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. I'm not telling him he isn't.
he wouldn't care.
He wouldn't.
Stevie wouldn't. He'd be more concerned about when the next Shepherd's pie is coming.
It'd be in anyway. Bumper would be in.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Just don't know what position, because he plays right across the right back, left back, centre half, midfield.
Yeah.
Where you put him?
Yeah, stick him anywhere. Yeah. Luis, I imagine from Salah's point of view, like, it must be great to be going onto the pitch in that rich vein of form, knowing pretty much everything you do is perfection.
Yeah, but that's a tricky situation. You have to handle it very well because it's been there before, and then suddenly it was all gone. Everybody was talking about, well, maybe it's 1 year, or maybe he's struggling, he's never gonna score as many goals as the first year. So I'm sure that that's why he's trying to keep the way of being positive, being trying to every single game give 120%, because he knows they can flip any single time. And if you're not scoring goals, everybody is expecting him to score 35 goals this season. But he's a striker, and sometimes strikers go for a very difficult situation. They don't score for 3-4 goals, and everybody's talking about, you're not that good as we thought he was. But at the moment, he's in a fantastic situation, and that momentum he has to try to continue doing it as many games as possible, because they're going to need him.
Stevie, which Galactico did you enjoy playing with the most during your time in Madrid?
Galactico. I mean, the Galacticos, there's only, what, four, is there? You know what?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a strange term, Galactico, because, you know, the better players, the ones who won the Champions League 3 times, they weren't considered Galacticos.
Sure.
Roberto Carlos, Fernando Hierro, Raul, they weren't Galacticos, but the four people we signed were considered Galacticos. I mean, Luis came in, and I played with him for the longest time.
So what's our list? Figo, Zidane, Beckham.
Ronaldo, and then Beckham.
Yeah.
I didn't play with David much, but of course I played with him at England. You know, Zizou and Ronaldo were excellent. But, I mean, I don't know.
I love that. Zizou and Ronaldo was okay. I mean, wow.
He's got them all on speed dial as well.
No, yeah. Maybe Luis, because I played with him longest.
Right.
You know, but they were all great. I mean, first and foremost, they were great players, of course. Luis will attest, they were lovely. They're lovely people. That's the most important thing. They weren't idiots. They're all friends.
Yeah.
They all had a laugh and a joke, and that was more important than anything. Yes, they were all incredible footballers. They'd all won World Player of the Year, Ballon d'Ors, and whatnot. But so, you know, they were all fine.
When I've spoken to Real Madrid players in the past, and I've asked, like, who really impressed you when you first joined, a name that always comes up, which surprises me, is Guti. Like everybody says that
as a football player.
Yeah,
wonderful footballer.
Yeah, wonderful
footballer. Probably should have achieved more. Should have played more times. But the squad was so packed that he couldn't. He stayed for a long time. But he was an incredible footballer. Yeah, when you watch training sessions, like you do, some people, you know, only go into training sessions and take it easy. Other people star in it, and he was one that if you watched the training session, you'd always say, wow, who's he?
Right.
You know, who's he? He stood out a million miles better than a lot of the other players who'd be playing alongside.
Mentality probably was his issue at certain points. People say that sometimes he didn't have that mentality of, I want more. I want to bring my talent to the top of everything. And that's why maybe he couldn't at the end fit, but it was the talent, he was just...
He may have been better, funny enough, leaving, and then if he would have left, he probably would have been the big star of the next team that he went to. His quality was that good. But I think he lived in Madrid. I'm not sure whether he was born in Madrid, but I think he was, you know, he lived in the city and really enjoyed the city, and he loved playing for Real Madrid. And if that's the case, fine. But I don't think his reputation would have been better in another team, because he would have been the star man. He may well have not won as much, but his reputation would have been as a footballer excellent.
I heard rumours that he went to the cinema too much.
Yeah,
effectively.
Madrid's got a lot of them.
The Madrid multiplex.
Ian, there are no questions for you, but I want to ask you, with like the eve of a big game like this, does it make any difference to you, given you've commentated so many in your life, in your long life?
I actually haven't done that many Clásicos. I did the one, Macca did it with me when Gareth Bale went off the pitch. You remember that?
The Copa del Rey
final. You know, he's injured again. That's a pity. But
do you still get the same
buzz? Yeah, of course you do. Yeah, this is a massive game. It's the most watched game. It's going to be compulsive viewing. And, it matters, this game. So you're excited as a commentator. I think the day you're not excited about covering a game like this, that's the time to quit.
Have you ever heard the fans sing your name during or after a match? Do you remember your reaction when the whole stadium was singing your name? Well, it feels a Sangria song is your way, Luis. What was it like when you first heard that?
Actually, I didn't know they were singing my name. And I remember that I was with John and Risa. I think it was at the Birmingham Stadium. And it was a friendly game at during the preseason. And it was John and Risa who told me, listen, they are singing a song to you. I said, there's no way. I mean, that's no way. I couldn't understand what they're saying. He told me, no, it's like this. Luis Garcia, the Sangria. And I
the song's more famous
song, isn't
now,
it?
Isn't it? Because there's lots of, songs now about Liverpool players. So.
And when I arrived home, I told my wife and I said, listen, they've been singing, but I thought, I wasn't used to here in Spain, there is not that many that receive a song. So I was expecting that maybe one time, but they start singing it every single weekend. And actually, it's quite something very special and very emotional when you realize the other day in Madrid, they were singing. I was receiving videos on social media everywhere in Madrid, in the city center, Plaza Mayor, at the stadium. A lot of the fans singing the song. And that's something very special for so many years.
Maca, did you have a song? Good or bad?
You did, didn't you?
Yeah, not really, no.
He tries to disown the song.
What was the song?
McManaman was too hard all the way to put it into a song.
Well, Liverpool fans or Real Madrid fans wouldn't have, they didn't really have songs, really. So they were just the
chants.
McManaman, wasn't that the one?
Oh, really? Like
See, it does fit.
He's had it again.
You shouldn't have told me about it. What? I didn't remember.
I just said no song, and you never even asked the question, and you're like, yesterday's song.
I just sang it, and he said, yeah, that was the one.
No, because he went, oh, yeah, the Muppet song.
John Arne Riise had one, didn't he?
I'm not bringing you anymore. Yeah, to change the subject. Not bringing you anymore.
I want to know how you scored that goal. That was
the final question, Stephen Reese. If you were to go back in time, is there a game you'd like to play again?
A game again?
Yeah. The one you enjoyed, maybe to relive that game, go back and make amends for something you did wrong. Yeah,
any final that you've won, of course, and any final that you've lost, that's to make amends. That's quite an easy one.
Right, but anyone in particular stand out?
Nah, not really.
Nah. Luis, what about you?
I don't know, yeah. I mean, of course, Champions League final was a special one. But I, if I have to go back, I will say my debut when I was a kid at the Camp Nou.
Yeah.
I think I was dreaming when I was a kid to play for Barcelona. And that chance, I have to go all around to finally play for Barcelona. And that game, I think, was very special. I remember to take a picture in front of the mirror because I couldn't believe it. So take a picture just before to go to the pitch. I mean, I'm not sure if everybody will do that.
What camera did you? It must have been an old school.
An old school.
Polaroid camera.
Yeah, I still have it.
Very nice. Ian, what game would you like to go back and commentate?
Oh, well, way too many, really.
What, to try and do a better job?
Honestly, yeah, because you do get up, go home, and you maybe watch it back and say, why did I say that? Or why didn't I make that point there? So,
Ian, don't be hard on yourself.
No, I'm not going to be.
No, but what about...
It's all gone now, anyway.
What about a good game? What about a game that you would like to relive?
To relive as commentary, I think maybe that USA one again.
Oh, yeah, the Go-Go USA.
Yeah, because, that was dramatic. That was dramatic.
All about Ian. All about
that's
Ian.
That's how they
it wasn't about me. It was about Landon Donovan.
He said Go-Go USA.
Landon Donovan scored the goal. I was just the bloke talking about it.
Well, Ian, you've done well from that, though.
Well, you said that.
What's that? You've done well. Yes. Well, you're with us now.
I'll take the compliment.
Who'd have thought where you'd be without Go-Go USA and Landon Donovan?
Well, probably in the gutter somewhere.
Well, there's still time tonight. Thank you very much. ESPN FC back on your screen tomorrow, where again, of course, it'll be all about El Clasico. But this time, looking back